offering loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. This is Prem from Team Radio Sahai. As always, with me is Brother Harishankar from the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. If you've been a regular listener of our program, you'll be aware that it's the 1991 Summer Course series that we go through in this program, where we play Swami's discourses. We try to take a little bit of time and understand what Swami is saying in there. We've gone through 5 discourses in the series so far. This is the 6th discourse, and I think we've spent 3 or 4 weeks already in this particular discourse. And this discourse is on the Prashnopanishad. As we all know, the Upanishads are known for their profundity and the ability to convey very, very profound messages in a very concise manner. And among the Upanishads, the Prashnopanishad is one where, like the Keno Upanishad, which we saw the last time around, very, very profound, very precise, and so beautifully explained by Swami through this discourse. So before we go into what we heard last week Swami saying about this discourse, and before we go into what Swami has to say this week, I invite Brother Hari to join all of us. Sairam Hari.
Sairam Prem. Good evening.
And even as we ended last week, Swami was talking about a very important concept which all of us as spiritual aspirants have to remember, where Swami was talking about the preparedness to take on difficulties, to take on challenges.
Yeah.
He said that that's a very, very important thing.
Yes.
And if we look at Swami's devotees, I think we know that, you know, Swami has never hidden that fact.
Yes.
From devotees. I remember one of my classmates was forcefully taken to a prayer gathering by his parents, by one of these very, very popular gurus. Let's not name the person. But they had this huge hall, like a Kulant hall, everybody was seated, and they had a prayer session or something like that. And there was this person who was announcing over the PA system that now we'll have a particular prayer. And he said at the end of it, whatever desires you've come with will be fulfilled. You can go back feeling that whatever problem you came with, whatever desire you came with is fulfilled. And they had that prayer at the end of it. Again, the announcement was made that whatever your desire you came with has been fulfilled, you can go back and, you know, you will no more have problems in your life. And he was saying that it was so alien to him when he was listening to that. Because Swami was somebody, as we saw in the discourse clip last week, never minces words when it comes to that. He says that, yes, you have to face it.
Yes.
I mean, there is no running away from it. Right?
Absolutely, yeah. This was the actually towards the end of the discourse segment which was played last week, and we didn't have the time to really go over it in detail. In fact, the first part of the segment of last week's discourse which we played, there the first segment was entirely devoted to like discovering or inquiring into the purpose of life, into what should be the goal of life. And Swami, in very nutshell, he puts that you should aspire to for the welfare of society. And that is a very worthy goal to have, to aspire for the, you know, uplift of the humanity, right? And in that segment, he also gives this example of a potter, right? Who is like, so he is a person who, you know, after he just feels that whether, you know, the going all through these trials and tribulations is worth it, and then the pot assures him that it is. Says, look at what I have been through. Right, all the heating over the clay, firing over the clay, and then being shaped and all that, and finally this is what I am right now. So it's so Swami kind of gives us the, you know, in a nutshell, saying that like the difficulties that you overcome are in a sense a crucible, right, through which you are passed through, so that like what comes out is something very beautiful, like an ornament. And Swami used to say, you know, like when I call you Bangaru, that's precisely what I'm trying to convey.
Right. But, there's a lot of confusion about it, in a sense. You know? There are a lot of people who are surprised when difficulties come by.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people who expect too much of it. You know, yes. It's almost like everybody who comes to Swami will have to suffer.
Yeah.
And literally Swami had a name like that.
Mm.
You know, because I remember even when my parents came first to Swami,
mm.
there were those who were devotees in the 60s.
Mm.
They continued to be devotees, but somehow fell out of actively coming for darshans and actively being participating in Swami's activities and all that.
Mm.
So they would say, that be careful, you go to Swami, then he's going to take away everything that you have.
Mm.
He's going to put you through, you know, the fire and you'll have to face it.
Yeah.
Literally, Swami had a name like that.
Mm.
You know? And once I was talking to a devotee who used to come to Swami in the 1960s.
Mm.
Okay, and he asked Swami, that Swami, why is it so? Mm. Why is it that Swami has a name like this? Because by then he had heard from a lot of people that advice. So, Swami gave a very beautiful explanation. You know, he said, look, you go to the Himalayas.
Mm.
Okay, if you're a tourist, if you just want to have some good time, you go to Shimla. Right? And in Shimla, you have good hotels, you have five-star hotels.
Mm.
You can stay there, good lodging, you have running water, you have hot water. Okay, you can live comfortably and come back.
Mm.
Then Swami said, if you're a little more adventurous, you'll go for trekking.
Mm.
Right? And you'll go and stay in a place which is a little higher.
Mm.
And there, that place, probably you will get a room, but you might not get a heater maybe.
Mm.
You might not get hot water. And you might have to put up with a little more discomfort.
Splendid.
Okay. Mm. And Swami said, if you're very, very adventurous,
mm.
and if you are trying to scale the Mount Everest,
mm.
don't look for any of these things.
Fantastic.
Right?
Absolutely. Mm.
And then Swami said, that's the same way I treat people who come to me.
Oh.
He said, if your goal is ultimate, mm. then you have to be prepared for adventure.
Mm.
But if you're coming only as a visitor, if you're only coming to, you know, let me have a look at all the ashrams in the country.
Yes.
Then, you know, that is the same amount of attention you will get from me.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know what more to say.
Yeah, because there's a, you know, like a lot of the present, like, you know, the neo religion movements,
mm-hmm.
they're all focused towards like happiness, like, you know, so in the sense that like what gives happiness. And different ways to attain that happiness and all that. But I read a very nice article that actually sometimes the search for meaning even abandons happiness as a quest.
Exactly, right. Right?
So the, like what you were saying. So, like, you know, I could in the comfort of my home
mm-hmm.
sit on a sofa and like watch a mountaineer climb the Mount Everest, right? And I have all the comfort around me and there's but there's absolutely no meaning in what I'm doing. I'm just mm-hmm. watching the person. Whereas the person who has climbed Mount Everest, comforts totally are removed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's living on the edge of the world
mm-hmm.
and on the edge of life itself. But he's done something very, very meaningful. He's pursued his, you know, meaning in life.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's like something very tremendous. And it's very important to observe that all hardships, the quest for happiness, all that is set aside because in the, you know, quest for meaning.
Exactly.
So that's something
and,
most people...
Right,
really
and it's beautifully connected, you know, because as you were saying, that first part of the clip, Swami spoke about you can't find your happiness without seeking the happiness of those around you. And how you can only progress as a society. It is so much connected to this idea of... you know, finding that purpose. Because we've seen that with so many of these people. In fact, I think Bill Gates also speaks of that experience.
Mm.
When I think his chopper or his aircraft crashes,
mm.
he's not able. He goes for a safari in Africa and he's got stuck in one of the villages.
Mm.
Apparently, that's how he... It suddenly dawns on him that people are really suffering.
Right.
Right. And that's when he goes about making the Gates Foundation. And after that, he's given himself so much into charity.
Right.
So he was saying that, you know, once it occurs to you that people are suffering, he said no amount of comfort is able to fill that void it has created.
Mm.
Right. You can have all the achievements, you can have all the comfort and money, but this void cannot be filled by anything at all. You need to do something to fill this void, and that's what suddenly gives you a new purpose in life.
Yes. Mm. And also, I was considering it's so, you know, the stage at which Swami brings up suffering, right? He's speaking about how, you know, the very worthy goal in life is to aspire for the welfare, the, you know, uplift of people around you.
Mm.
And then almost in the same breath he says that you should welcome difficulties. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like he's anticipating. Now, in the normal course, as you and I, if we lead a very humdrum normal life and then we stand up, we say that let's like create some difference in society. And the moment we say so, we are immediately, lot of obstacles. It's mm-hmm. like a tsunami of obstacles will come our way. A lot of difficulties will come our way. Right? Any good that you want to, create, there's almost like a backlash of bad, like, you know, how in physics we speak about, like, as the magnetic field fluctuates, there's a electric field which gets created, right, which will then, you know, decelerate the movement of this field. It's almost like that. It's almost a law of the universe, right? But Swami is already cautioning us that these difficulties are meant for you to overcome. Right? And similarly in life, we want to create a difference in our own lives. We almost will definitely encounter some obstacle in the way. And Swami is giving us that courage. Right? In fact, I remember one very interesting conversation Swami was having with Anil Kumar sir once. These are, you know, those days when every evening we were treated to this spectacle of Swami having sometimes very hilarious conversations with Anil Kumar sir,
right,
just before the bhajans, no? So this was out in the portico, and for some time there was no exchange of words between Swami and Anil Kumar sir. They were just looking at each other, and then Swami simply asked Anil Kumar sir, "So why are you looking so happy?" And he says, "Swami, I'm looking at you, I'm just gazing on your face, and it's filling me with happiness." And immediately Swami says, "Oh, you are very happy, is it? Okay, I will send some worries your way." You know, like actually, I mean, it was a very profound moment, because you know that you're looking at a person who holds the strings of destiny in his hands. And if he says, "I will send worries your way," you can be certain he is going to. So I was watching how Anil Kumar sir will, you know, he will wriggle his way out of this. So beautiful, so smoothly, so graciously he did it. So gracefully, I mean. He looked at Bhagavan, he said, "Swami, I am already in my, you know, I'm past my retirement age, 65. My life has been full of difficulties. At least now let me be happy." Immediately, Swami started laughing. He said, "No, I was just kidding with you." But you know, that moment, you could clearly see that Swami loves putting, you know, like worries, sorrows, everything, as perhaps, you know, Swami used to often say in many of discourses, is to give the example of Kunti.
He
said Kunti would pray to Lord Krishna saying that, "Lord Krishna, you actually give me difficulties, because that's the only way I'm going to remember you. Surrounded by comfort and happiness, perhaps I may forget, but where there are difficulties, I'm surely going to remember you. So that is your gift to me." So, and also, sorrow, it sometimes acts, so sorrow, difficulties, hardships, they act as a spiritual catalyst.
Right.
If we see in the life of Lord Buddha, it's very clear.
Exactly.
That born into a royal family, into a royal life, and perhaps he would have ended like being an emperor of a very small kingdom. But he went on to rule a much larger spiritual kingdom the moment he was confronted with sorrow, and then decided to inquire into that phenomenon called sorrow, dukkha. So the moment he decided to actually confront it, see, most of us, when we are confronted with sorrow, we resist it. The first thing we try to do is find a way out of it. But the benefit of actually looking at sorrow in its face and then like diving deep into it and looking for what secrets it holds, and that gave rise to the enlightened one.
Exactly. In fact, I was just talking to a classmate of mine a couple of days back. He was saying, you know, we've heard all of these discourses and we've heard Swami talking about spirituality and all that. And, you know, in the back of your mind, you know that end of the day, happiness is what you're chasing, right? And he said, you need to be really grounded, because he lives in the West. So he was saying that I look at people around me, none of them have a spiritual life, I mean, in general, you know, they were not like devoted, and hardly churchgoers there. But all of them were happy.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying, wherever I see happy people.
Mm.
You know, whether it's old people or whether it's young people, they all seem to be happy. I mean, they're comfortable lives.
Mm.
They have all the necessities.
Mm.
I mean, even the poorest of the poor is actually taken care of by the government.
Yes.
So he said, suddenly it strikes you like, what is the need for anything higher?
Right.
But when you look at it, see, that's what happens. Like, when you talk about Buddha, Buddha is somebody who had all of that. And in fact, his father makes sure that none of the darker side of life comes anywhere,
sheltered from.
It crosses roads with him. But when they say, you know, the idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by anybody. And that's what happens with Buddha. None of these things could fill that pit anymore. Right? And I think it happens for all of us in life. Sometime it will strike that there is a certain amount of emptiness in all of this. And when that desire for something higher comes, I think, as Swami says, you start looking for meaning.
Right.
You know, more than anything else, you start looking for meaning. Like, for instance, many of the devotees, you will find they're suffering with something, some terminal illness or some long-drawn illness. Invariably, they'll come to Swami and ask why.
Hmm.
You know, why am I undergoing this? Like a devotee who had a lot of family problems, his brother died, his sister died, and his parents divorced and all that.
Hmm.
So he comes to Swami and asks, Swami, why did this happen to me?
Hmm.
You know, why do you ask that question?
Hmm.
Because meaning can give more solace than anything else.
Right.
The moment you know that this is the reason, you know, you suddenly fall back and say, okay, there is the reason. You know,
right.
Whether I agree with it or I can see it or I can't.
Yeah.
The thought that there is a reason.
Hmm.
Because that solace which meaning can give cannot be given by what you can have physically around you.
Right.
And that's what happens. You can fill your life with all these achievements, with comforts and money and all of this.
Hmm.
But the moment that question comes, what's the whole point?
Yeah.
And unless that is filled with this meaning and purpose, I mean, you're lost.
Absolutely. Right? So, as you said, you could be surrounded with riches, comforts. But in that aspect of life, perhaps you're experiencing bankruptcy. And the moment you do, that, you know, that emptiness, it begins to gnaw at you, right? And a lot of this actually even is born, like if you look at the studies into leadership, it's like a very important aspect. You know, the one Harvard researcher, Warren Bennis, is almost considered like, you know, one of the, what shall we say, the seminal inquiries into leadership are perhaps conducted by him in the modern sphere, right? And he says that in almost every great leader that he has been able to interview or interact with, you will notice that at some point of time they have passed through like what they call as the crucible of life, right? Where they've been tried, tested, fried even. And they come out of it almost a completely different person. And that person then exhibits some really very distinct, you know, leadership traits. And one of the very good examples, I think, is given of is of Admiral Stockton.
Right.
James Stockton
Stockdale.
James Stockdale, who was in the U.S. Navy, right? And during the Vietnam War, he's captured as a prisoner of war, and for several years, and he's interned there in Vietnam. And you know, it was definitely a very difficult situation. Of course, all your comforts are totally denied to you. So, and many of his colleagues, they die due to various reasons like disease,
depression,
despair. And he comes out strong, much stronger than he did when he went in. And so when they, you know, they kind of studied, like, and he himself spoke about his experience. And he says that if he can primarily distinguish what had him survive and come out of this test, he says two things. One is that he had this undying faith that he would prevail in the end. Right? And it's that, wouldn't call it optimism, but more like he kept repeating to himself that he would, you know, survive this. But at the same time, like, there was none of this false optimism. Right, he was also willing to confront the harsh reality of what he was facing. And he says, so when he was asked, like, who were the people who died? And he said, like, these were the people who kept telling themselves that they would live till next Christmas.
Mm.
Right? It was just false optimism. They were not ready to do anything about it.
Mm.
So he says both have to go hand in hand, you know, have that a bright, yeah, something to look forward to, but then also confront what's in front of you. Right?
Exactly. I think that's actually a very, very beautiful theory, which I think sometime back you had only forwarded that thing about, he says all the optimists perished.
All the optimists perished.
You know,
yes.
That's the Stockdale paradox, really. Yeah. But that's the thing, you know, when Swami is saying that, when he says that statement, kashte pale, you equate the difficulties that you go through with the progress that you make.
Precisely. Yeah.
You don't say progress is on the other side of the difficulty. You know, I turn a blind eye to the difficulties,
right,
then I'm ready to progress. Swami says, no, this is the thing. You know, I always quote this, you know, when we were in university, we used to go to the gym for some time. There would always be these one or two chaps who live in the gym. Right? Some gymnast or something, they would really make that their obsession during their student days. So they will, you know, by default become the gym trainers for the rest of us.
When
you go, they will tell us, do this, do that, and all that.
Mm.
So I remember a very interesting conversation I had with one of these chaps. And I don't know whether he realized how profound he was, but it was very, very profound what he said.
Mm.
He said, he asked me to do some particular exercise with the dumbbells or something like that. And after doing that, he said, you know, are you absolutely done? He said, yeah, I'm not able to lift it at all. So he said, okay, do five more now. He said, yeah, I'm not able to do. And he said, no, do five more, because this five which you'll do is more valuable than the 15 that you did before. He said, when you feel that you're out, what you do really defines you. I said, okay, wow, that's nice. And then at the end of it, it was really a tough workout. And then he said, do you feel the pain in your hands? I said, yeah, I mean, it's almost numb with pain. And he said, do you realize that there is a joy in that pain? He said, because when you feel that pain, you know that this is what is going to result in strength tomorrow.
Right.
So he said, there is a joy in that pain. You come into the gym for that pain. Do you realize that? And, you know, that's precisely what it is. When you, that's the, you know, adventurism with which Swami wants us to take on life. Swami says, life is a challenge. Meet it.
Right.
You meet it, when you say meet it, Swami doesn't say face it.
Right.
He says meet it. You go in with enthusiasm and you put out your hand and you say,
yeah,
challenge, I'm here to meet you.
In fact, I picked up a very small segment from that discourse, and I think it's pretty important. Like, Swami says, you talk of hardship, but you pass the time and you survive all the while. Right? No matter what you're going through, the one thing is that you do survive it at the end. So, within this time, you are continuously conquering difficulties. Because Swami says, the strength to be victorious is our very nature.
Beautiful.
And Swami declares that the strength to be victorious is our nature. So, he says, it's like, no matter what it is, you will survive. that James Stockdale says, that he had that. It never died within him, not the optimism, but that faith that he would survive in the end. Right? And Swami says that troubles are exactly the time to build courage. And he says courage is the basis for dhairyam sarvasadakam. Right? And this is what he is, and it's a beautiful thing that he is telling these students as they step into life. Right? So it's very realistic.
Right.
It is, none of the rosy, picture of what life is going to be. Like, imagine that perhaps this is like a, you know, most people, when they have their convocation, they receive the speech, right, the keynote talk. But if you consider that this is something like that for most of the students, then stepping into life, right, imagine that they're given this very beautiful, you know, medicine as you walk in.
Right.
It's a very good vaccination against the rest of what they'll undergo. Right.
So I think we'll go into the next clip. I think the clip which we'll be playing today also will be dwelling on the same theme. So we can continue discussing after that also. Because Swami is, as you were saying, really driving it in. You know, the way Swami has spaced this entire discourse, he starts with talking about paropakaram or helping others. And then he speaks about how you are a social being, you know.
Hmm.
In fact, there was a study which was done, an anthropological study. They said, among all the animals which survived a long period, you know, hmm. they give, you know, the Ice Age and all of that put together,
hmm.
the only species which pretty much survived intact
hmm.
was a human species.
Hmm.
And if you look at it, look at the species physiologically, it's hmm. the least equipped.
Hmm.
You don't have claws, you don't have wings,
hmm.
you know, you don't have any of those things which really require, you know, going by Darwin's theory, you know, you need that kind of survival instincts.
Hmm.
None of these the human species have.
Hmm.
The only way they have survived is they are very, very good at forming social communities.
Hmm.
And that has been the strength. That's what has made them live through the most difficult of times, and that's what explains the ubiquitousness of the species also.
Hmm.
You find it in the coldest regions, you find it, find humans in the hottest regions, and they're able to survive this only because they've mastered this art of living as a society.
Right.
And, you know, giving up individualism and living as a group.
Hmm.
Right. And that's what Swami says here, that's so important,
hmm.
that you can't be happy if your society that you're living in is not happy.
Right.
Right. Hmm. And then, of course, this part where Swami is talking about facing challenges.
Hmm.
So we listen to the next clip in that discourse.
So, to reach the high position that you wish to, prior to that, you need to go through troubles and sorrows. You have to face them. Therefore, happiness is not born out of happiness. From happiness, you can never obtain happiness. Only from trouble, we derive pleasure. This body has been given to us to endure difficulties. Only when we put this body to right use, we would be able to derive the courage and strength to face the troubles. The strength which is in man is not in any other being. Thinking, how am I to face such difficulties, one becomes weak. No need to feel weak. The strength needed to endure such difficulties too is within us. If the strength needed to endure such difficulties is not there, how are we putting up with hardships and carrying on with life? This is the direct proof. You are saying difficulties. You are spending time. And in this time, you have been tiding over difficulties. The strength to conquer is within us. Since we do not know the means of using this strength within, we are wilting under difficulties. We must always be courageous. That is the four F's told to children.
First F, follow the master.
First F is to follow the master.
Ni master, ni conscience.
Your master is your conscience.
Ni hudayame ni yokka master.
Your own heart is your master.
Kanukani, follow the master. Face the devil. Fight to the end. Finish the game.
Therefore, follow the master. Face the devil. Fight to the end. Finish the game. This is our life. We must face everything.
Kastame, kastame, kastame.
If you keep lamenting troubles, troubles, troubles and get depressed, the troubles will become more burdensome. It is during tough times that we must face the difficulties. Courage can achieve anything. All sorts of troubles will keep coming to us in this world. We cannot afford to get perturbed by it. We must face them boldly. It was this courage that Pipilada taught his students. The hearts of students are very tender. But as they do not understand things,
confusion.
They get confused. Because of this confusion, with confusion they lose their fuse.
Depression
begins.
Depression valla,
because of this depression, life turns into despair. This is not good. Each and everything we must face with courage. Such courage and adventurousness must develop in students. Without giving up truth, without leaving love, without losing courage, we must develop unwavering mind and steady vision. Only when we lead our lives this way, we would reap the benefits befitting our efforts. No individual can obtain happiness without undergoing difficulties.
పిలచి అడిగా చెరకు పెట్టునా బెల్లంబు పిప్పి గొట్టి రసము పీల్చకున్న.
Just by asking, will the sugar cane give you jaggery without crushing it and extracting the juice?
ఓ చెరుకారిదానికి నమస్కారం చేసి నాకు బెల్లం ఇవ్వమంటే ఇస్తుందా?
If you prostrate before it and say, oh sugar cane, give me jaggery, will it give? You need to put it in a machine and crush it. Then burn it in a fire. And on account of many such refining processes, it takes the form of a permanent fine sugar. Thinking, why should I trouble this sugar cane? If you keep it in a corner and keep thinking, oh, there is jaggery in this sugar cane, the sugar cane will only dry and shrivel up. The sweet juice in it would be wasted too. So our body is like the sugar cane. The troubles which we go through are like the sadhana or the process of refinement. Through these difficulties, the divinity that is present as the essence within us will manifest. Divinity is present as the essence. This essence will help us in our lives. This is our divine life. So every individual, without giving into troubles, without caring for sorrows, taking on everything that comes by with courage and adventurousness, the path of truth has to be attained.
సరైనటువంటి రీతిలో మనం అనుభవించడానికి ప్రయత్నించాలి.
The truth of all truths, we must make efforts to experience this truth in the right manner.
That was the next clip.
Mm-hmm.
If the listeners have not got scared with that clip, they're still with us. Right. But, you know, going back to that same thing, there's no mincing words. And the approach and the vigor with which Swami is saying it, he also explains this. You know, he says that this needs to be known, this needs to be accepted, and that acceptance will only give you the right attitude to face it.
Right. Yeah, because I was just thinking, even as I was listening to Swami speaking about this, as to what role suffering plays in a spiritual life or even in a normal life, right? So one thing we identified, we said at the beginning that suffering is like a spiritual catalyst. But I think even more, one underlying fact, inescapable fact, is that like suffering is the balancing act of the universe.
Right.
If you look at anything, I remember when I was very young, I used to, fantasize a lot about drinking cool drinks. You know, that was the most exciting thing ever, right? So if like that day, say mother permits us, you go and have thumbs up or gold spot.
Saved for months together for that.
Yes.
One drink.
Yeah. So that used to be an ultimate experience. So somewhere in my mind, a fantasy got created. Like what if like when I grow up, actually work in that factory. So gold spot used to be my favorite drink.
Right.
And I used to think, what if I could go and work in the gold spot factory, and I'll always be surrounded with this gold spot drink. I can have it like whenever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And today when I look at that fantasy, I think instead of sweet, gold spot, I'm confronted with the idea of maybe diabetes and the attendant, difficulties. Mm. So it's just the balancing act. It's almost as if it's wired into the universe. Take up pretty much any pleasure, and the moment you try to indulge in it, like, and we would like to think that there's indefinite pleasure that will come out of it. On the one side, economics says that there is the theory of marginal utility. So they caution us even before we indulge that, there's some point of you're going to feel sated. And there is otherwise, the universe itself rebounds and there is some check due to which you cannot like continually, indulge in it. Right? So it's almost like a force that has you come back to what? Right? And why is it's something that we have to think about. Like, why is the universe pushing us back away from, something that gives us happiness?
Talking about gold spot and drinks, I remember when we all had the same fetish, I guess. But when we were in school, once we were taken to this bottling company, they had this unit where they would recycle the bottle, which comes back from the market, get it washed and sterilize it, and then fill it again with a drink, and again it goes out. So as a field trip, we were taken to this to this factory where they do this bottling. So it's really fascinating, the number of bottles that are washed and sterilized and filled in a span of one day is like mind-boggling. So as children, we were like so fascinated by it. But what was the real fascination was that we know from our seniors that when you go for this field trip, at the end of it, they would bring crates and crates of these bottled drinks, and you can have as many as you want, because that's the very source. Yeah. So, though we were fascinated by the machinery and all that, we were waiting for that. But the thing is, by the time you go through that entire factory and come out, that smell of that sweetener will leave you so nauseated.
Right.
You don't realize that. You enjoy it when it's just one bottle, and when it's one bottle in 3 months and you've strived and struggled for that, it's a different thing. But, when you go through that and come, it's that heightened smell of that sweetener. I mean, even then, you kind of indulge in the drink, but it leaves you with a different kind of a feeling about that drink after that. Really, you feel it, even if you're not wise enough to recognize it. I think the body is, as you said, wired to understand that there is a limit for everything.
Yes, exactly. Swami used to always say that everything has its limits.
Right.
There's nothing. It's as if the universe itself doesn't want you to be lost in it.
Mm.
Right? It pushes you back that, no, you're bigger than this.
Right.
So I think that way I feel like, you know, this aspect of suffering has its own role, its own, you know, the, as we said, again a catalyst. In yeah. that sense, it's a catalyst for your spiritual yeah. well-being.
And the other thing is, you know, when Swami speaks about the attitude towards which you have to face this, again, I'm coming back to the thing of a lot of devotees saying that you take to a spiritual path, you have to suffer. You come to Swami, you have to go to suffering. Apparently, Swami used to tell a chinnakatha in the 60s when he was talking to devotees. And say a chap goes to his friend and he's been having cold for about 2 weeks. He's been coughing and sneezing. So when he's talking to his friend, he starts sneezing and coughing. The friend says, "Hey, you've been having this for a long time. Haven't you taken any medication?" So he says, "Nothing seems to be working." So he tells him, "You know what, I know a doctor. He's a very good friend of mine. I'll take you to his clinic and we'll show him the thing and he'll definitely prescribe something." So he goes to the clinic. And Swami says he walks through the wards, and you can imagine Swami's description. He says, there one fellow is hanging, here one fellow's leg is this way, there the other fellow is sleeping on his stomach. There's another fellow who is plastered, whole body is plastered. And this man is looking at all of that. And finally, they go and sit in the doctor's chamber. And the doctor's gone on rounds. Okay, and the friend says, "I'll just look around and try to find the doctor." So this man who's with the cough, he's sitting alone in the doctor's chamber. So he takes a look around and he asks the nurse, he says, "Why are all these people plastered like this?" So then Swami says that nurse has had a very tough day. So she is like in a tone of irritation, she says, whoever comes to a doctor just plasters them like this. Okay. And this man, you know, he gets scared and panicky and he gets up and runs away even before his friend comes back. Okay. And Swami says, see, that man needed only a syrup or a tablet.
Right.
Okay, but he looked at the people around and he thought that what if I also am going to be, you know, put in a bed like this. Swami said, you know, God will give what you require.
Right.
Okay, it's not necessary that everybody has to go through that. And that's a very, very important attitude, because, you know, when Swami says that you approach it with the right kind of perspective, you know that what comes to me is meant for me.
Right?
You know, if I'm not having any difficulty, that's meant for me. If I'm having some difficulty, that's meant for me.
Exactly.
Right? That attitude is so important.
Yes. I recall this, you know, I think the most important thing to remember is that God is watching the whole time. It's like, although you can't see Him, is like somewhere close. Swami is watching the entire time. I remember when we were very young, we read that the story of, I think, Abou Ben Adam, where he asks God that in my dream, like I see that there are times of great difficulty, right, and those are the times when I see only one set of footprints in the sands of time. Like he's like reviewing his life, and he notices that almost everywhere else in his life he can see God is walking with him. He can see like two set of footprints on the sands of time. But he notices there are like periods where there's only one set of footprints. So he asks God, like, I know that those are the times when there were difficulties in my life and I see only one set of footprints. And does that mean that you had abandoned me at that time? And God says, those footprints are mine. And I was the one who was carrying you on my shoulders. So that's when God comes closest. I remember, you know, soon after I joined as a student, one small conversation with Bhagwan, and he remembered one small thing that once I had come to Prashantilam on the day of my birthday. And at that time I knew that, you know, students, they had this privilege that on the day of their birthday they could go with the sacred rice and cloves. They could offer it to Bhagwan, and I'd seen Swami sometimes take those mantrakshatas and actually pour it on the, you know, boys, the students' head. And I used to really, you know, pray that I too should get a chance like that. So that time I had come to Prashantinilayam from Chennai. It was the day, it was my birthday, and I was really hoping that, you know, Swami would. So I somehow smuggled in through the Sevadal security a small, you know, vat of the sacred rice. And during darshan, I showed it to Swami, and Swami just stared at it, looked at me, and just walked away. And I was reduced to tears. You know, I felt like, why on my birthday, why should I undergo, you know, this kind of tribulation? And Swami, maybe 3 or 4 years after that, as joined as a student, and Swami remembered that, and he said, you had come on your birthday, that day so much you cried, isn't it? Like,
my God.
And I was so amazed, I just kept looking at Swami, and I was very confused, you know. On the one side, I was like very happy that, you know, Swami was there at that time, that he remembered this, you know, that this had happened with me. And at the same time, I was very confused that he was watching the suffering without doing anything about it. You know, so it was with mixed feelings when I heard Swami say, you know, that he recalled that that had happened. But I think the essential thing is, like, Swami knows whatever you're going through is, like, for your good. It's going to bear fruit at some point of time. That was the lesson I took away from that interaction, that he knows what's best. And as long as, you know, we always have to have faith in the fact that he's a merciful God. Right? And he knows when to take the pressure off. Right? When you can't really take it, he will, you know, absorb that.
I think, you know, that's precisely why Swami is saying this. At one point, Swami is saying the children's hearts are tender, but they are being, you know, given incorrect understanding.
Right.
Because it comes to that, when you look at Swami, you say that, you know, Swami allowed some things to happen like this. Swami allowed us to go through some difficulties and reverses in life.
Right.
Swami would say that even this is even a lesson for parents. You know, parents bring up their children. They have to recognize that challenges make your children more powerful.
Right.
And, you know, bring the inner strength out. In fact, I think recently somebody forwarded a message of someone had taken a picture of Barack Obama's daughter working in a restaurant joint. You know, he's the president, and here is the daughter, the youngest daughter. And he said, no, I mean, this is how all the children go through their life. They make their own money by taking up a job. And he said, you better do that. You know, because one who knows the value of struggling will literally give it to the children as, you know, their gift to them. Literally.
Right.
And that's the perspective which is so important. We saw that in the hostel, you know. Swami could have afforded any kind of comfort for his students, because we saw how much Swami would say that my students are my property, and, you know, Swami would spend so much time with the students, would spend so much time thinking about, you know, the students and their comforts. But why wasn't there as much comfort in the hostel?
Yes.
And because Swami would say that, no, this is good. This is how they will learn. This is how they will, you know, grow when they go through this, you know, period in the hostel. I'm reminded a couple of weeks back, we were listening to a talk by one of our senior professors in the management department, Kumar Bhaskar sir. He was telling when he first got recruited, and he was like expecting something. Here is a business school, and he has become a lecturer in a business school. So he thought he'll be given a spacious, you know, room for himself in the office. There'll be a staff quarters with a huge office for himself. Then he says he goes into this staff room where there are 12 teachers sitting, and some of them sharing a table,
right.
Right, and sharing cupboards and all that. And he says, oh God, where have I got stuck? Right. And classrooms did not have fans.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So he said, my God, what is all this? How do you put up with all this? And he said, this is one hand. The conditions were like this. But on the other hand, Swami was showering so much love and attention. Right. Everything. Every teacher, Swami would come up and ask, are you comfortable? And inquire about their family, inquire about their children and their education. And if someone's not well, Swami would take care. But you're saying that, you know, there's so much of contradiction in this. On one hand, Swami is so caring. On the other hand, he's allowing you to be in a bit of discomfort. And he was saying that apparently Swami had once called for a staff meeting. Right? So all these teachers were there, and Swami gave them a short talk. And Swami said, see, consider this as your home. You know, it's your own place. Any problem you have, you come to me. Anything that you need, you come to me. You come straight to me. You don't have to go and speak to anybody else. You know, you can come straight and tell me, and I will do it. And Swami kept on saying that, no, whatever you need, you come to me, whatever you need, you come to me. And then Swami ended that statement by saying, other than tables and fans. And you're saying that that's exactly what we wanted, right?
Yes.
Swami said, other than tables and fans, anything that you want, you come to me.
Yes.
Because Swami said, you have to, you know, experience that to understand.
Yes, and in many aspects, you know, it's... I remember that even when I joined the trust office, one theme that really stood out was frugality. Right, in every, because Swami always believed in treating money with enormous amount of respect. You know, just the, I mean, he, first of all, as far as the funds that were there with the trust, and Swami made it very clear that this money belongs to devotees. They have given it to us out of their love. In fact, he said, given it to me out of their love, and we should treat it with a lot of caution. You know, so there was always, I recall that as, I mean, suppliers to our hospitals, right, they always remark that given any equipment that is given to us, we really make it outlive its life. In one sense, of course, there's like lot of good maintenance. We make sure that the equipment is treated well, right. and at the same time, there is, you know, like we we don't waste anything, right? Like any equipment that is given to us, we make sure that it is utilized fully and very well. So in that sense, I mean, it's almost become like a culture, you know, throughout the trust institutions, that money should not be wasted.
Right.
Right, at every single point, because that is something Swami has drilled into us repeatedly. Like, if you don't need, you know, if you can make do with one of something, don't, you know, simply buy two.
Really, you know, that's the attitude. I remember when my first year post graduation, we had a team from the UGC come and you know, review the various departments. They come periodically, because when you send them requests for grants,
right,
for various things, they come periodically to check and all that. So they would come and you know, come department wise and have a look and all that. And one of those members, you know, he was telling a lecturer in our department. He said, "You know, your university is one of those few universities that gets whatever they ask for."
Right. Right.
Because when we come here, we know that there is no wastage.
Correct. Absolutely.
We know that when you ask for something, you really need it. Right. And when we come and see here, that we see that there is a certain respect that you give for the resources that you have. And that culture, as you said, really comes from Swami.
Absolutely.
We've really seen that in Swami, even personally. Swami would do each thing. Right? We've seen that. The beautiful sight, you know, the lesson apart, but it was so beautiful to see Swami do that. When Swami would get a letter. You know, many people would not have much to say. They'll have only four lines to write.
Right.
And it'll be right on top of the page.
Correct.
So Swami would read it and very, very religiously fold it and neatly, you know, make a crease, then tear the written part and, you know, throw it away. And then Swami will show the thing and Swami said, "This can be reused."
Reused, right? Yeah.
And, you know, that's recently... as part of the archival work which we're doing, the number of books in which Swami used to write the Vahinis and all that, when we look at it, I mean, it's a life filled with lesson. Nothing more can be said.
Yeah.
Because Swami has written from cover to cover.
Exactly. This is precisely what I wanted to bring to your notice, that I saw some of those books that, you know, when in Purnachandra, the books Swami is in his own handwriting, in many of those, a lot of it is about education, right? And the first thing I noticed that there's not an inch of space in the page that Swami had left out. Right? So many of us, we are content with leaving like blank pages and throw away half-used books. But, you know, that was a frugality which even Swami showed in his life. See, many people, they have this notion that as a spiritual master and who commanded like such a, you know, such a large spiritual following, that Swami lived in luxury. But believe me, I have gone to Swami's room, the one that he lived in for almost 50 years in the Prashanti Mandir. First of all, the steps, right, they're so small that I do not really understand how Swami could have negotiated those steps like day after day, very cramped, right? And the room also was very, very small. Okay, and it's very difficult to imagine that somebody of Swami's stature And he was so content to live in such sparse surroundings. And even, see, the residence in Yajur Mandir, he inhabited it like from 2006 to 2011, the last 5 years, right? And I see the room, and the room which, the bedroom of Bhagwan, it's not like very big, you know, it could almost be as large as a studio. And in fact, one of the students who used to stay with Bhagwan, he told me that even though that was such a large room provided, like Swami had kept like so many, you know, so many things, like say prasadams for devotees and so many items, he used to keep in his room itself.
In his own room.
Right. In his own room he used to stock it. In such a way that finally the such a large room would then again get confined into a very small space. And Swami would utilize that every inch of space so well. I remember once in the interview room, Swami, he was he took the tumbler and he drank water from it, and then he showed us, you know, that I have not left even a single drop in this. He even like, you know, tossed the tumbler a little to show that even one drop was not coming out. He says, I use everything to its hilt. I don't waste any small thing that is given to me. And I think like that is a lesson for the present day, like where for everything obsolescence is built in. We don't make things to last.
One thing is the thrift and one thing is the simplicity. The other thing is to live like that when you can afford it. Right? You know,
yes,
many people ask this, to say this thing of, you know, I can have it, so I can have it.
Yep.
You know, this question of I can afford it, but can we all afford it? Right? You know, as a society, as a planet, can we afford it?
Yeah.
I think that's becoming a question which most of us need to ask. And that's why Swami stood out as an example in many of these things. You know, talking about that room, it's all said and done. Mandir looks very beautiful with its, you know, granite walls. But granite walls can become really uncomfortable during the summer.
Heat,
you know, when the sun falls directly on the walls. And, you know, for 40 years, Swami lived in that small room, I think. Little more than 40 years, Swami lived in that room. I don't think anybody has ever heard Swami complain.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that is the beauty. When Swami says, in this discourse, he says, you know, you don't realize that you have it in you to be happy in spite of all these difficulties. Right? I think whenever Swami would say, I am God, you are also God, the first thing which comes to our mind is, can I wave my hand and materialize like Swami? But there was so much more to that divinity than just this ability of, you know, the qualities of omnipresence and omnipotence and omniscience.
Right.
That quality of forbearance, that quality of being happy, whatever be the situation around, that, you know, quality of working day in and day out and being so fulfilled. I think all of those qualities are divine qualities. And so when Swami says, I am God, you are also God, I think we need to concentrate on those qualities as well.
Yeah, I think one thing that I would take away from the discussion we had today was essentially equating happiness with physical pleasure or the worldly pleasure of any kind, and that is something that is actually going to bring us sorrow.
Right.
Whereas
eventually, right.
Yes. And the quest, you know, living a life of meaning, living a life that is dedicated to a purpose that is like larger than ourselves, I think that is the true panacea for sorrow. I think that is something that, you know, these are almost a very great lesson to live by. And I think that's pretty much a very profound, you know, thing that Swami has taught us through this.
And we didn't realize we really overshot the time.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the reason when you're talking about Swami's message, don't talk about Swami and Swami's life. But how do you do that?
You know? You can't separate one from the other.
That. Once you do that, and time is a casualty.
Yeah.
Right? So dear listeners, we're really sorry for overshooting our time. But I'm sure most of you wouldn't mind we overshooting the time. We definitely enjoyed it. So do join us again next week at 7:30 for this program. Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. On behalf of Ari and myself, we offer this humble effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. In a short while from now, Bishu will be here for the last segment of the day, outside, inside, deep inside. Thank you. Jai Sairam.